This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen, alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Happy beginning of the tournament day. Real beginning of the tournament to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We're with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I'm Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. I'm still waiting to get paid. 10 or 15 million. Nick's paying everybody else right now. Why can't
Yeah, what
we?
The hell? You've been here. You've kept your mouth shut. You've gone about your work. You've been a good example for younger fellows like myself.
I'm in the building every day. You know?
Yeah.
Why can't
yeah,
I get
15 million? Yeah, you just put your head down and go to work. You don't ask your agent about the details or
no.
anything.
No, man.
Or your Asian.
I'm just here to play radio. You know?
Yes.
I'm just here to play radio.
I'm just here to spit hot takes.
That's it.
And whatever happens, happens.
That's right, man. That's right.
Lots of news yesterday.
Yeah, lots of news.
Yeah. And it started off, it kind of built to a crescendo of sorts in that Tytus Howard was restructured. Yeah. It frees up about $11 million in cap space this year. Mm-hmm. It seemed to cement Tytus Howard as being immune to whatever reset button the Texans were hitting on the offensive line.
That's a great way to put it. Yes, he's going to be here is the message.
It makes it really hard to trade him. Yeah. At least a lot of us were wondering, okay, boy, D'Amico Ryan said we got to hit the reset button on the offensive line back at the combine, and they commenced to resetting.
Mm-hmm.
But would it include Tytus Howard? Doesn't appear so. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to juggle that and think, okay, well, does this mean that maybe he feels comfortable that they're going to use him as a tackle? And then, bam, they sign Cam Robinson.
Yeah.
Who's had an up-and-down career, has played pretty well versus the Texans, truth be told.
Yeah.
I think I've always had a higher assessment of Cam Robinson, the left tackle, because with the Jaguars, he's only allowed, in 10 games, he's allowed one sack and several pressures versus the Texans. And yet, if you look at other games or if you look at his experience in Minnesota, he's kind of an up-and-down player.
Sure.
So then you're wondering, okay, does this mean Cam Robinson for now is the left tackle and Tytus Howard is going to move to guard and then they're going to move... They have Blake Fisher start at right tackle.
I don't know.
It could be any number of things.
Yeah.
And then, something that you and I and many other people had been hoping for, Danielle Hunter signs a one-year extension, which is awesome for many, many reasons.
One, he's going to be around for another year after this. That's the biggest thing.
I just wanted you to fill in the blank.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah.
Well, this is the biggest thing that you've been hitting. I was thinking of you as I was saying this.
Okay.
The fact that you, I'm glad you pointed this out because I hadn't been conscious of how close Danielle Hunter and Myles Garrett are in age.
Yep.
That Danielle Hunter's only 1 year older than Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett just signed a $40 million per year contract.
Mm-hmm.
So we were wondering, all right, boy, it was really cool that Danielle Hunter signed a 2 year deal because that's team friendly, yada, yada, yada.
Flexible.
Last year. But now he's a free agent next year and he's probably thinking about making $40 million per year.
Correct.
I love the fact, for those of you who don't know, he signed a one-year extension, makes about $35 million next year. According to Texans cap, as of last night, he anticipates that this deal, even though they also gave Danielle Hunter a pay raise this year too, will probably save some money on the cap this year. So I've always advocated and advised players, like, man, sign 1 and 2 year deals, get a bunch of guaranteed money, and then you can have freedom. You get disgruntled, a new coach comes in that you hate or something, you don't have to be a B word about everything. You just pick up and move. If you like where you are, just go ahead and sign another 1 year deal, which he basically did.
I think it's great. You keep a great player around for another year. You've got this defense solidified. You know, the core nucleus of the defense is solidified for multiple years now. They bring in C.J. Gardner.
The core.
Bring in C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who's got 2 years left on his deal. You're going to keep Will Anderson Jr. around for a while. Azeez is around for a couple more years. Stingley just got extended. Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock are on rookie deals. The nucleus, the 7 or 8-headed straw that stirs the drink on this defense is intact for two more seasons, which in the NFL is an eternity to keep that many good players intact on one side of the ball. I love this deal for Danielle Hunter. It's almost completely guaranteed, just like his initial deal with the Texans, the 2 years, $50 million, where like $48 million was guaranteed. Practically all of this new money of $35.6 million is guaranteed. I also love the fact, just a little wrinkle in all this, that in a way, Cleveland has given another deal to somebody that the rest of the league is ignoring entirely when it comes to the pecking order at the position. Remember when they gave Deshaun the $230 million guaranteed, and the rest of the league was like, yeah, the next quarterback is not getting the $230 guaranteed. Myles Garrett got $40 million guaranteed right after Max Crosby got $35.5 million guaranteed. A week later, like, that's a massive jump. Cleveland is clearly bribing Myles Garrett to put aside all his ill will and money whipping him. Danielle Hunter got $35.6 million, just a little above Max Crosby, who has the same contract in the defensive end market.
I would say, though, honestly, that Danielle Hunter, when you talk about guaranteed money per year of the contract, per the amount of service time, Danielle Hunter's is better. I like looking at the NFL and the agents try to make everything look glitzier and bigger than it is.
Yeah.
The guaranteed money is what matters.
Yeah.
Danielle Hunter signed up for one extra year, and it's not one extra year 6 years from now.
Right.
And got $35 million extra guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right. So for now, Myles Garrett was over $100 million guaranteed, was it not?
It was a lot. It was 123. Yeah.
Okay. 123. I think you had said his salary, but it was the $100-plus million guaranteed was the whole deal. So the big thing about Garrett, which is similar to Stingley, is it doesn't genuinely kick in until a couple years down the road.
Yeah.
So when you factor in the time value of money and whatnot, that it's a really good deal for Danielle Hunter. But it's also, as we've been saying, it's really good for the team to not leverage their future completely and totally, and they can account for injury by doing these shorter term deals. I just love it. It's leasing instead of owning. You buy a really expensive car, it's a depreciating asset, and 4 years down the road, you're upside down on the mortgage or on the note. Football players are very similar, and if you only potentially need them for 2 or 3 years, sometimes a lease is your best option.
They lose 20% of the value when they drive off the lot. Yes.
Yeah.
So the Cam Robinson deal, for those who don't know the details on that, Cam Robinson, of course, left tackle for most of his career in Jacksonville, got traded to Minnesota before the deadline last year after they lost Christian Dursau. And he played for Minnesota last year. It wasn't great. It wasn't horrible. Cam Robinson, in doing all the recon work on him yesterday, Seth, obviously we watched him in Jacksonville a number of years. He is truly one where, like, kind of beauty's in the eye of the beholder. There were some people like, all right, this will work, you know, for a year.
Yeah.
And there were other people saying he had his worst season in 2024. Look, it's a 1 year, $12 million deal. It can go up to $14 million a year. I think this is Nick Caserio's way of kind of playing the middle on the current market. You get a veteran guy you can put out there at left tackle.
Yeah.
That you see how the draft unfolds. And I think they're going to know better how to attack left tackle long-term once the draft is over. But this is at least you're not playing either a rookie at left tackle or Titus Howard, who's never played left tackle before, at left tackle.
Yeah.
I think that's what this is.
I think I would disagree slightly in that it was pretty bad in Minnesota. He gave up the third highest pressure rate and the fourth most sacks among left tackles in the NFL. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a good fit for him in Minnesota. So the question is, though, a mid-season trade for an offensive lineman is not a simple thing to pull off. So I'll give him a little bit of a pass there. He's been hot and cold. There have been times where he looks like he was worth a high draft pick and all of that. I don't think by any stretch of the imagination that you can put him in ink as the starting left tackle. It's probably the most likely scenario. Mm-hmm. But as I've been saying all along, you need to have five. First and foremost, if you can get five competent offensive linemen, just, okay, it makes sense that this guy is a starter along the offensive line, you'll be better than what it was last year, which was 1.5 really good players and three guys that just looked like they didn't belong. So I'm cool with that for now, but you have to wait and see what happens with the draft. You have to wait and see which veterans might become available at some given point. And the other big thing here, and this annoyed me last night. I almost wanted to punch a wall. When the initial report is up to $14 million, it's not $14 million.
Oh, the Nugget Hussies have been doing this for 3 years now.
Yeah, and like, because immediately, no, but it bothers me that people still, they go talking about it that way. You're going to pay him $14 million? No, it's up to four. We don't know what the incentives are. There could be starts, play time, all that stuff.
Yep.
So once we see the details of the contract, maybe we'll see exactly how the Texans felt about it. But the other big thing about this offseason is that it makes sense financially. We could leave aside any kind of culture talk or anything. It makes sense financially to move on from Laremy Tunsil when you have to address the entire offensive line. But this is an offseason where there really weren't great options available in free agency, unless you wanted to pay overpay huge money. Dan Moore went to the Titans for what?
Four years, $82 million is what I saw on that.
No, I didn't have an appetite for that. No. I don't need Dan Moore for 4 years.
That's the big thing, the 4 years, right?
And then in the draft, you look in the draft, and man, most of the guys that are the higher ranked tackles that might be there around 25, or even if the Texans trade up a little bit, they're okay. He's an offensive tackle, but maybe he's better off as a guard. And so I don't think the Texans are in a position to really. It wouldn't have been wise to throw a boatload of resources into any left tackle this year. And if they use the 25th pick on one of these guys, that's going to be an appropriate pick. It's not exciting. It's nothing you should get excited about. I don't know where I fall on the optimism scale that the Clinton Ronar. You and I tend to be a little bit more to the right side of the scale.
Yes, yes.
But it's interesting and it's something to work with. So at the very least, if Cam Robinson starts, he's not my dream candidate at left tackle, but he's a viable football player for now.
Yeah. I mean, you can kind of start to see where it's going, you know? And so I'm cool with that signing. I'm cool with what you said, that don't put him in ink at left tackle. If I had to bet, I would say he's going to be the left tackle. But, you know, I think that's a competitive situation, too. I think what gets interesting with the offensive line is the ripple effect. I mean, Titus Howard, you got to make up your mind on Titus Howard. Is he a guard or a tackle, right? Like heading into training camp, you got to make up your mind. Are you making the bet on Blake Fisher at right tackle, and thus is your left guard solution what your left guard solution ended up being at the end of last season, Titus Howard?
And Sam Warren from the Chronicle had a really good stat on that. Once they went to that lineup where Titus Howard was at left guard and Blake Fisher was at right tackle, Stroud was pressured on 28.8% of his dropbacks over the last five regular season games, as opposed to the previous regular season games where it was 38.6%.
Yeah.
So it wasn't great. It wasn't like it was an awesome offensive line out there, but they were a better operating offensive line with Titus at left guard and Blake Fisher at right tackle. Everybody disregard the Chiefs game. Don't even think about it.
Yeah, what Chiefs game? I don't know what you're talking about.
Although they did, I mean, in the run game, they did some really good things in that game. They actually moved people. They moved large human beings in that game.
I was optimistic to begin with. The Cam Robinson signing does not do anything to diminish that. I'll say that. I know he was very up and down, a lot of down last year. I'm cool with it. This is still a big bet on Nick Caley and Cole Popovich at the end of the day to make it work in 2025. You know, this is not an all-star crew that they've got out there.
Yeah, no, it's the biggest wild card, and we know nothing about it or can't predict anything about it. Is that, yeah, it's really, really going to matter whether or not Nick Caley's a good
whether they're well coached. Yeah, no question. All right, we're off and running on a Thursday. Good to be with you. You can text us 713 713- 572-4610. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Watch us on YouTube and Twitch, and we appreciate you tuning in on that Odyssey app. The Derek Stingley Jr. signing is official. He met with the media yesterday, and he was vintage Stingley yesterday in his press conference. We will hear from the Texans' newest multi-millionaire coming up next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Derek Stingley Jr. met with the media yesterday. He was classic Stingley, man. I didn't get to see the initial press conference right away. I had an event in the middle of the day. By the way, shout out to Frost Bank. I had a really great event with them yesterday. They do a luncheon. I think it's monthly or quarterly, but yeah. I was their guest speaker, and I had a great time out there. A lot of
Frost Bank. Yeah. Yes, way better than Frost Nixon.
Better. I would have been out of place at Frost.
Frost Nixon sucked.
Yeah.
So you spoke, and you basically did you save the company? Was that what they brought you in to do? were they like, hey. We need you to save the company.
They gave me a handheld microphone, if you see any of the pictures on social, and I walked around and I said, greed is good.
You did.
I did a gecko. I just walked around.
Let me tell you a little something about social Darwinism, friends.
That's right. Yes. I just geckoed the whole thing. Yeah. Kids, look it up. It's Wall Street, 1987. Great movie that ages really, really well. Yeah.
The government's going to tell you that you can't give mortgages to people. Because of, their credit rating.
Meanwhile,
are you a man or are you a mouse? You too, ladies.
Yeah, meanwhile.
You had suspenders on and a pinstripe shirt.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Cigarette.
Cufflinks.
Yeah. Smoking a cigarette while I'm doing it. Yeah.
You got yourself a toupee and slicked it back.
It was cool. It was cool, man. We had a lot of listeners in that room. It was fun.
Good.
Getting some love. So shout out to Frost Bank. That was a lot of fun yesterday.
To be clear, yeah. I was 100% joking about saving the company.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Banks tend to care about stuff like that.
Yes.
Yeah. There's going to be a run on Frost Bank later this morning.
Yeah, no. Things are fine.
People pounding at the door
things
at 8 a.m.
fine.
I want my money.
Seth was joking. It's all good. It was a great luncheon. Shout
they
out
can
to
afford to pay Shanti Pendergast. I think things are all right.
That's right, man. That's right. Yeah. I don't work cheap.
Stingley.
Yeah, Stingley. He also, like a lot like me, does not work cheap. Derek Stingley Jr.
No, he doesn't. Mm-mm. But he also, unlike Gordon Gekko, would never stand up and say anything
say
about
greed is
good or anything.
He would never stand up and say anything.
He had 18 questions. The press conference lasted 11 minutes.
Yes.
So if you cut it down to when he actually spoke, it's probably about 6 minutes of talk time.
Yes.
But gave some good answers. And I think the one thing about my honest impression of Stingley over the last year or so has been he's a guy who obviously naturally doesn't crave the spotlight, and I don't think he really enjoys talking to the media or anything. He just really wants to play football. Like we said, he's like a more ethical Yoda.
Yes.
He's a Yoda without the inflated ego.
Yep,
he just
right.
wants to work at his craft.
That's right.
You know?
And he doesn't care about having to teach other people their craft. I just want to come in, although I think he likes working with the young guys and whatnot, you know, Kamari.
Oh,
and
no,
so
yeah,
forth.
He loves it, yeah. But he doesn't like bully him the way Yoda did or anything.
Like
put him down to try to, you know, loft up his own status.
That's right.
So, I've been trying to figure him out. He's not comfortable speaking, but it doesn't make him uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
which I'm always amazed by people like that, because there's nothing worse than public speaking if you hate public speaking.
Right.
And yet, he looks like he's not enjoying it, and yet it doesn't look like his confidence is shaken or anything. It's just, and he doesn't look like, I got to get the hell out of here. He doesn't get grumpy about it or anything. So I thought he gave some really good answers last night.
Yeah, and
yesterday.
I think I think he's very thoughtful. And I know this. We did the post-game show with him after the Dolphins game when he had the two picks. And boy, if you get him going on a subject that he really, really likes, he'll go. You know, like, and not that he doesn't like talking about the contract or his family and things like that, but
the Pokemon, but get after it.
But when you ask him, take us through that play, like take us through the play where you rip the ball out of Tyreek Hill's hands. Holy crap! Like, he'll start to sound like one of these guys that's at the desk on one of the studio shows. He's excellent. So yesterday, he was asked what it means that the Texans are willing to invest in him.
I mean, it means a lot that they, you know, allow me to go out there with my coaches, and they taught me this game and at this level, and they believe that I can be somebody to to teach the younger people that's on the team. And, you know, I'm not going to talk in front of everybody, but, I mean, I know how to be a great teammate. So, I guess they believe in that. So, I mean, that's what I believe in. So.
Basically just said I'm not going to be Yoda. He said, I like teaching the young guys, but I'm not going to be the center of attention on everything. You
right.
Know?
Yeah. I don't need to be, you know, I don't need to act like, oh, wait a second. Yoda's about to speak at the council. Right. Shut your stupid ass up, Samuel L. Jackson. Okay.
Mace Windu.
Yeah. He's just going to go out there and slay some hooded fools. And there you go.
That's it.
Without having to yap all the time.
Man. Yeah, man.
No, I think there's a lot about him that reminds me of Andre Johnson, which is.
Yes.
Andre Johnson was a great leader just by simply setting a really good example. When you're the best player on the team, or with Andre, 100% the best player on the team for large stretches of time, but with Derek Stingley, one of the best players on the team, that. The you don't really have to say a lot, and I think sometimes coaches make the mistake, because I saw this with Andre Johnson sometimes when he was a young player, was like people and encourage him, were like, hey, Andre, you know, you can speak up and everything. And I'm like, all right, but I don't, like, if Andre doesn't want to speak up, I just let him keep doing what he's doing.
Right.
Because other people do it for you. Because the coaches love being able to say, okay, you guys see Andre there? You see the guy that's winning every wind sprint by 20 yards.
Yeah.
Not just when you win wind sprints, it's not just because you're naturally gifted, it's because you're actually working hard. You know, you see Andre doing his work in the weight room and everything, and I think Stingley's a lot like that. Stingley is just, he works at his craft.
Yes.
He does his job.
And I think the other thing too, if you encourage people who normally lead by example or are naturally quiet leaders to all of a sudden speak out, there's a lack of authenticity to it. And I'll tell you this, ultimately those guys do speak out at some point, you know, and that's, it's a lot more impactful when they actually do get pretty animated and upset or whatever about something when they're not normally that kind of person.
Yeah.
It's got a bigger, like, holy crap, Andre is mad. You know, Stingley is mad, you know, like,
or
wow.
Even if he's not mad, just in a team environment when everybody's circled up, and a lot of times you've got a tendency to zone out, because, man, some guys get up there and they get way too happy.
Yeah.
And they're going on for... 10 minutes afterwards, when a guy like Andre spoke, it was okay. It's going to be 30 seconds, and everybody's dialed in like it's a moment of silence. So the other part of it too is, I think if you look at the two restructures or extensions this week, these last 3 days, Derek Stingley, huge extension, record breaking for a DB, and then Danielle Hunter, second highest paid defensive end in the league. And if you wanted to cut it up different ways, I could argue that it's actually a much better contract than what Myles Garrett got in terms of guaranteed money per year, all that.
Average annual value, people speak that language. It's the second highest.
So two guys who just do their job.
Yes.
It's the old mantra. It's the old Bill Parcells mantra, do your job. And those guys both do that. It reminds me of when I was a rookie and I was sitting in a meeting next to Don Davey, who's now, he got initially rich a little bit from football, but then he went and he...
It's legit rich now.
He owns like 200 Firehouse subs, and he's got a financial planning company that's got like a billions under management.
Yeah.
Like, he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And that was some of the advice that resonated with me. It was my first week or two in the NFL. In the regular season, we started getting our regular season checks, you know? We got paper checks back in the day. And I was sitting next to him in meetings, being a good rookie and just taking notes and being quiet. So we sat in and we were waiting for the coach to get in there. And he opened up his paycheck and just slid it over in front of me and was like, see, Seth, you just keep your mouth shut, do your job.
Yep.
That's all it takes, man.
That's great. That's really cool. I mean,
Yeah. And that was his advice. Just, you know what? Just don't. I think he said, keep your mouth shut, don't be in a pain in the ass, and just and work really hard at doing your job.
Well,
and that was it.
Does anybody embody that more than Derek Stingley Jr. and Danielle Hunter? I mean, like, you know, they're in the building every day. They're putting the work in. They are low maintenance. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They are low maintenance.
Well, and I think it's good when the team sets an example by rewarding those guys.
Absolutely.
Doesn't have to come by agitating for a new contract or anything.
Quite
or side-eye emojiing every big deal and stuff like that. It is interesting that they trade away Laremy Tunsil, the ultimate side-eye emoji on social media whenever anybody gets a big contract.
Yep.
And then in the same stretch of time, reward a couple guys very handsomely that just do their job.
It's not nothing. It's not nothing. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a coincidence, I don't think. Derek Stingley Jr. was asked, what does it feel like to have the McNairs and Nick Caserio show this much faith in him from the start?
I mean, that means a lot, especially, like, throughout the years. Just every single year, it seemed like I gained their trust more. Like, they're allowing me to be comfortable with who I am, like, whether that's on the field, off the field. Like, so there was never any, like, pressure to be this person or be that person. So I think it's pretty cool. Like, they actually believe in me. So that's nice.
You know, it's interesting. If you were to go back and look, less than 2 years ago, really like 18 months ago, after week two of Stingley's second year, that would be D'Amico's first year as head coach, they were 0-2, and he hurt his hamstring in that Colts game. And keep in mind, like, Stingley had not been Stingley yet. He was coming off a rookie year where he missed the second half of the season with a hamstring, and now 2 weeks into 2023, he's got a hamstring injury. And I guarantee you, if we go back and find our shows from that week after that Colts game, I know it. I can remember it. There were people looking for Nick Caserio's head. Because Kenyon Green had been lost for the year.
Yeah.
And now Derek Stingley Jr., the first two first-round picks of his regime, all of a sudden are just these injury-riddled afterthoughts. And it's been a lot of fun to see the Stingley thing kind of come back around to where they envisioned it being.
Well, and there were warning signs on those injury issues, too, with both of those guys. Yeah. Kenyon Green was injured when they drafted
him,
and then Derek Stingley had a long and documented history of it. There is a clip coming up that we'll play in a little bit that still makes me a little bit nervous about the injuries, but we'll get to it when we get to it.
Which one is it? As far we can as, do it here. Which
is, we'll do Stingley 14.
Okay.
But as far as him letting, like, saying, like, they let him be himself, I do think they're it's one of the things, and I'm not criticizing as one is good or one is bad, but I think the tone of the team has changed a lot since Bob McNair was the owner, and then really including the Bill O'Brien era afterwards, after he passed away, where I think Cal and Hannah, I don't know if they either encourage or the environment has just developed into one where it seems like guys feel much more comfortable just being themselves.
Yeah.
Part of that comes, though, too, in getting the right kinds of guys on the team.
Yeah.
Because there's sometimes when, you know, the Bengals back in the day, it was like, okay, you guys, listen, you're not allowed to be yourselves. You want me to pull up your criminal record?
Right.
You guys are not allowed to be yourselves. It feels looser in some respects with D'Amico and then with Cal and Hannah, just the environment over there.
Yeah, I think I'm glad you mentioned D'Amico. I think he's got a lot to do with that, too. Here's Derek Stingley Jr. talking about, we just mentioned his health. What's allowed you to stay healthy this past season?
Well, I mean, when it comes to injuries, like, you're not really in control of injuries. Like, I mean, certain things you are, but, like, I don't know, sometimes stuff just happens. You know, last year, being able to play every game, that was really my main goal, and I mean, that's my goal every year. I don't know. Like, I just work out, and then like the strength staff, they make sure that they know what we're doing, and just go by that. So,
okay, here's my swing of emotions through all of that, because I've been hoping to hear something like we did with Correa back when he used to have back issues, but then he developed a routine very specifically to address it, warm up beforehand, and lo and behold, his back issues were gone. Except when a massage therapist got too aggressive with him. So, and that was a rib issue, right? Yeah, the back, whatever.
Yeah, that was a rib.
The saving grace, I think, was at the end, where I think when it comes to working out and a lot of those things, I think Stingley's one of those guys that he's got his team of people, including his father. They tell him what to do, and he goes out and does it. And he probably doesn't demand lengthy explanations of it all. So I wouldn't be surprised if they've tweaked his regimen to perhaps address any potential hamstring issues.
Yeah.
You know, you figure out the quad hamstring strength balance and all that stuff. So that's what I'm throwing my faith into, is that Stingley doesn't even realize that they've actually done things to help him stay
healthy. To him, it's just like, I just go work out. I just go.
Sean, those are the guys that, because you know how I overanalyze everything.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be jealous of the guys. In college especially, it seemed like the kids who were engineering majors, they'd be like strong as farm kids who would just, they look at the workout, even if it's a miserable workout, and then ba-dump, they just go through the workout and do it without thinking a single thing about it.
Yeah.
It's just like, here's the program, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'm not going to whine, I'm not going to do it. Like, I have an objective and I'm going to hit it. You know who else is like that? Who's an engineering type? Ooh. Wallace Marsh, your friend.
Yeah, very much so.
My friend, too.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
A closer friend to you.
Yeah.
For now. So, but he's super successful, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
There are so many really, really, really smart dudes who are freakishly strong in the weight room, and I think and when I watch them and I've gotten around them, like, at gyms and stuff,
yeah.
It really is that they put a lot of research into how they're going to work out, but then they don't overthink it.
Yeah.
They're like, nope, here's the protocol. Dude. I'm going to do it. Here we go.
You know what's funny?
And I'm like, how are you this strong, you nerd?
You know what's
Can
funny?
Can you let me out meathead you at least in this right. One thing?
You know what's yeah. Funny about that? Wallace used to be a master weightlifter back when he was in high school, like his younger days.
No, that was my point.
Oh, okay, okay. Okay, I didn't know that's you knew
yeah,
that.
He's freakishly strong.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I just thought you meant he was
I guess I didn't explain that part. I thought you knew where I was going with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I didn't know the audience knew.
Sean, know what I'm thinking 10 seconds before I say it.
Yes,
come on.
Wallace is a freaky weightlifter, for those who don't know. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Headlines. The Astros spring training has been about two things.
Oh.
And they both happened yesterday.
Do your job, left fielder. Have you not been listening?
And then the Texans. We'll recap what the Texans did. It was a big day for the Texans. Rockets get a win last night. 8 in a row for the Rockets. So we'll get to all that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get to headlines here. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Let's start with the Astros. Okay, let's start with the good. Let's start with the good.
The good.
There's two things that have been happening with great frequency this spring training. Well, I say great frequency. One more frequent than we would like. One, we would love more frequency. Cam Smith hit another home run yesterday, Seth.
Yeah.
So the bid, look, I mean, we're a week away from opening day. Like, there is a decision be made here. We are. A week from today, they open the season, and his OPS is still sitting here at 1,400 in spring training. There's really been, I mean, other than the first, you know, when he went 7-for-11 to start off, I mean, he wasn't going to continue at that pace, but he's not dropped down to where his OPS is at a human level at this point.
And but then when you start wondering, well, why wouldn't they just make a go of it? Just throw him out in right field. Jose Altuve shows up to remind you that it's not so simple to just throw a guy into the outfield after they've never played the position before.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Because Jose Altuve dropped another routine fly ball yesterday. Now, the similarities between the two situations, I guess, should be pointed out here. He dropped one a couple of days ago, comedically almost, and last night's was just as bad. In both instances, he was kind of gearing up to try to throw what was definitely going to be a runner tagging up on that arm from third base. And so the thought is, like, okay, he's just, and it's one of those things like a wide receiver in football. They start running before they catch the ball. You know, he's taking his eye off the ball. He's focused too much on the runner, and the ball winds up rolling into foul territory.
And he's doing what he has naturally done for a long time, is he's a great baseball player. He's gearing up to make a great play, but he doesn't have the fundamentals of it down. You know, it's like trying to drive a manual transmission really fast before you've really gotten ingrained in your soul exactly how to shift without thinking about it.
Yep.
So he's trying to downshift into third gear and take a corner, but he forgets to press the clutch.
Dude,
is basically what's
he's
happening.
Grinding the gears on the regular out there in left field.
Yeah. I don't know if we get. I feel like we can't even make manual transmission analogies anymore.
I know,
it's like a Seinfeld reference.
Yeah.
Too many young people in the audience don't know what the hell we're talking about.
That's right. so Altuve, look, the problem for the Astros, and we're getting texts on Altuve that we should read here. We might need to finally consider trading Altuve to a team that just needs a DH. I don't know what else to do. He can't play in the field. This is the problem. The texter points this out. He can't play in the field anywhere, and we already have a DH. That's the problem with this team. They have two guys on this team that should be full-time DHs.
Yeah.
And there's only one spot for them.
And they're not trading Yordan.
And they're not taking him out of DH either. You know, they don't want him running around in the outfield.
No, I'm saying, like, if you have one full-time DH, to get one, you'd have to trade one of them away. way.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think Jim Crane. I think Jim Crane would rather jump off a bridge than trade Altuve. And there's no way in hell the smart financial thing to do is to trade Yordan. Yordan's got one of the best deals in baseball.
Oh yeah.
And not to mention the fact that he's also just a really, really good baseball player mm-hmm. and younger. So this all comes back to, because we still get texts of people asking, hey, why are they even having Altuve in left field? Because he's not a good second baseman anymore. He's aged, and the reality of it, too, is that since they banned the shift, it's gotten harder to play second base.
Yeah.
So he's been aging, as Father Time would suggest he would have, and also it's gotten harder to play second base defensively.
Yeah.
So now the question is, do they move him back into second base? He's probably less of a... I don't know. It's weird. Second base is more important defensively, and yet he's probably less of a liability at second base. If he continues to have a drop every third game in left field, that he's going to be a bigger liability in left field.
I don't have the analytics to back this up. This is just my feeling, and a lot of it is based on recency and watching Altuve's errors cost them runs the last mm-hmm. couple of games. And even the one that didn't count as an error, where he just mistimed his jump and the ball goes rolling away and you give up a triple to a guy. It feels like to me that when errors do get made out there in left field, you know, things like runners on base, runners on third, like misplaying a fly ball that turns into a double or turns into a runner on second or third, those are higher leverage errors than the ones at second base, probably, is my guess. You know, those are run-causing errors out there.
Well, and especially when they're errors like we saw in the one spring training game where, he missed the catch, and it was kind of a difficult catch. It wasn't a routine catch, but then he forgot that he had to throw the ball in.
Stands there, yeah.
And people are going to test him. Mm-hmm. We can't have Altuve turn into a joke. You know, like I don't want it to turn into a laughing stock situation of him in left field.
No, I don't either.
For the good of the team, obviously, but just for our emotional attachment to Jose Altuve, I don't want this to be an era of Jose Altuve's career that's brought up ever again if it ends up being a disastrous experiment in the first month.
It's fine. If that's what it turns into, Seth, we can withstand the rest of Jose Altuve's contract. Let me see how many years are left on it here real quick. There's only 5 years left on his deal, so this is only going to be a topic for five more years. He better hit. I said this last year. I know he's Jose Altuve. He's arguably the greatest athlete in the history of this city. But he's on a five-year deal for well over $100 million moving forward. He deserves every penny just based on what he's meant to the franchise. I'm not complaining about the money, but he's not going anywhere. He's going to be on this team. And if you're going to trot him out there as a charity case in the lineup, he better be hitting every day. You know, his OPS better still be .850 every year, or else this does turn into a running joke.
I think the biggest concern we had was about his arm strength initially. For the most part, this was my stupid take, was that, hey, it'll take a while for him to get a feel for getting a read off the bat and all of that stuff. And he actually seems to adjust to it. He's in position to make these catches.
Yes.
He's reading it just fine.
Yeah.
It's when it comes to actually making the catch that it seems to be incredibly difficult for him.
Yeah, and that's a big part of it, is making the catch. That's a big part of the process.
This was my worst take. My worst take in terms of predicting anything was that I should have been saying, no, everybody, don't worry about the arm strength. No, don't worry about him reading the ball off the bat. It's going to be actually raising his glove and watching the ball into his glove.
Securing the ball.
That's going to be the issue.
Yep.
Now, Spillane the other day said, well, listen, these types of errors that he's been making, basically seeing the ball into his glove, I can't remember what Adam said. It was easily correctable or fixable or whatever.
He was talking because he said it was the same thing last night. He said it's because there's a runner on third.
Yeah,
and Altuve's more focused on the runner than he is the catch.
And it is, but it is like when you get the simple things aren't so simple when you get to the highest level of a sport.
That's right.
And that's where I get concerned, because he's 35 years old, trying to ingrain the muscle memory into doing the simple things.
When have you ever gone into opening day hoping that one of the things you need to really focus on is your left fielder actually catching the ball? It's opening day in Major League Baseball, and our left fielder has had problems catching fly balls. Like, that's not good.
Fly balls, too. I know it's not.
Real quick, just to get to the rest of the headlines.
I'm laughing to keep from crying. Yeah.
Cam Robinson signs with the Texans, 1 year, $12 million. Danielle Hunter extends his contract by a year, $35.6 million. Stingley deal is official. He met with the media yesterday. We'll get to all that at 7 o'clock. If you're just getting in your car, you're waiting for our takes on that, we will revisit that at 7 o'clock. Rockets win again last night. They beat the Magic 116 to 108. 8 wins in a row. Magic, not a good offensive team. Rockets kind of let them hang around a little bit at the end of the game. But at the end of the day, a win, another win without Amen Thompson. It looks like Amen Thompson. We have Vanessa Richardson on the show yesterday, sideline reporter for the Rockets. The best Amen Thompson injury updates have been coming from Vanessa on the broadcast. They showed some footage of him yesterday taking shots. I think the thing now is, can he withstand contact out there? But the hope is that he could be back for Miami tomorrow. That would be great.
Really good response from our listeners to Vanessa yesterday. Vanessa's very, very good at her job, and she's got an awesome personality.
Yep.
She's friends of both of us, much closer with you because she lives in your building.
Yes.
If she lived in our building, listen, she'd be over for dinner with Brandy and I every night. All right?
Amy and I joke, she's our Kramer. Like, she, you know, just knocks on the door, hops in. Yeah.
This is my final
Seinfeld reference,
thought.
Everybody. Seinfeld
yeah.
reference.
And then we'll get you a manual transmission one later. This is my objection to the, hey, that's a simple problem to fix.
Yeah.
That's exactly the problem. Yeah. Is it like, right, if it's a simple problem to fix, then why is it not fixed?
Yes.
that's like taking a dyslexic kid and being like, learning the alphabet's easy. That should be simple. I don't know why it's a problem. That's me. A special ed teacher. I have a kid comes in, I'm like, huh. Everybody knows how to do the alphabet. This should be simple to fix. Get on out of here. Yeah. If it's simple for lots of people, but a person is struggling with it, that tells me there's an issue there.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to sit here and let all of you ignore this poor dyslexic baseball player. My God.
He is baseball dyslexic. Altuve. He forgets it. It's his left. No, Al Jose, the glove's on your left hand. It's on your left hand, Jose. Yeah. All right. Danielle Hunter gets another year tacked on.
I tell you something about, you wanted to think about, you ever want to be confronted with how little you actually know about the way the world and the human brain operates? Go ahead and try to explain the concept of left and right to somebody who struggles to get it.
Yeah.
Because I've had experience working with some kids that have had, and it's like, go ahead and define right.
Yeah.
Like what right is.
Yeah.
And it's
foreign language to them.
Yeah. Look up in the dictionary. What's right? And they'll be like, it's to the east of north. And you're like, all right, but what's to the east of north?
Yeah.
It's right. Yeah. Like, all right.
Yep. Danielle Hunter, extension. Cam Robinson. This one kind of came out of nowhere. What does the Cam Robinson signing do to the Texans as far as how they're approaching the draft? Is there any effect, should there be any effect, on how they're approaching that 25th overall pick based on the signing of Cam Robinson? We'll talk about that in the 7 o'clock hour coming up next.